Welcome to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Big, historic, and controversial changes are coming to how California and Los Angeles try to help people who are experiencing the most severe mental illness. Last year, Governor Gavin Newsom signed into law the Community Assistance, Recovery, and Empowerment Act, or CARE for short. That law requires all counties in the state to create first-of-their-kind so-called CARE courts. In those courts, people who have the most serious untreated mental health problems, such as schizophrenia and psychotic disorders, can be ordered by judges to receive treatment and medication, even if it's ultimately against their will. Well, Los Angeles County is planning to unveil its CARE court system on December 1st, just 7 months from now. Lisa Wong is the director of L.A. County's already overburdened mental health department and acknowledges having it ready in time will be an enormous challenge.
I mean, to be honest, there probably wasn't any good time to implement CARE Court because it is a huge lift. It's a huge system change. There are going to be a lot of demands, but the need is out there.
So will L.A. be ready? And when up and running, will CARE Court really help people with the most severe mental illness, or will it threaten their civil liberties? Saul Gonzalez is co-host of KQED's The California Report, and he's been looking into it and brings us his story.
On the streets of L.A.'s Skid Row neighborhood, the sights and sounds of people fighting and in trouble because of mental health problems, often combined with drug and alcohol addiction, can be constant.
You leave me alone.
You're bothering me.
I'm not bothering you.
And Skid Row is also a place where people can be remarkably frank about the mental illnesses that have defined and destroyed their lives. People like Zenobia, who I met on San Pedro Street.
I'm manic depressant, bipolar with severe psychotic features.
Zenobia, who's in her 40s and doesn't want her last name used because of past troubles with the police, says she's been living on the streets for years because of her mental problems. And those problems, she says, have sometimes made her a threat, both to herself and to others. Like when she attacked a security guard in the neighborhood during a psychotic episode.
The man didn't even do nothing to me. But in my mind, he hit me, so I came back and I hit him. It would have caused me going to prison for 6 years as a felon.
If that all happened, you were having a mental health breakdown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's these kind of dire and potentially deadly mental health problems that the CARE Court system is supposed to tackle, says Lisa Wong of L.A. County. And Wong says the need is huge in the county, the epicenter of California's mental health crisis.
Definitely. I mean, I think just looking at our numbers is staggering. So our estimate is that LA County alone is probably going to get 7,500 petitions, resulting in 6,000 people who will qualify for CARE Court.
And Wong says those thousands will benefit from the kind of help CARE Court is supposed to provide. Carefully tailored and intensive mental health treatment for up to 2 years. Family members of the mentally ill will be one key to CARE Court's success. Along with first responders and mental health experts, relatives of the mentally ill will have the authority to refer their loved ones to the new system. If CARE Court had existed when your daughter was going through the worst of what she was going through.
Yeah. She would not have wasted the next 10 years of her life.
That's Harold Turner, the executive director of the Los Angeles Urban Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness and a CARE Court supporter. Turner's now adult daughter has struggled with mental illness since she was a teen, and in one psychotic episode, even stabbed her sister.
She had a breakdown and and ended up assaulting a family member and was arrested. But my goal was to get her into treatment and away from prison.
But Turner says he encountered a justice system in Los Angeles County that was way more interested in punishing his daughter with time behind bars than getting her mental health treatment. He thinks the CARE Court system, with its singular focus on mental health, will change that, especially for poor people of color who may not get the mental health help they need.
I'm hoping for accountability for all people involved, and it's never been that. The courts have been absent. And during the course of my daughter's trial, I can't tell you how often I sit in that courtroom and watch young black and brown men who should be going into treatment go out that back door to prison.
But if people don't participate in ordered care court assistance, they might be placed into conservatorships and forced into treatment and taking medications. Turner is supportive of that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There you have no problem with that.
I have no problem with that.
But a lot of other people do, given the history of past abuses in the mental health system, like coercive treatment, stretching back generations.
We don't need more deprivation of liberty for folks with disabilities. That's going in the wrong direction, not the right direction.
Kath Rogers is an attorney with the ACLU of Southern California. It supported a recently failed challenge to care court filed by civil and disability rights groups, but rejected by the California Supreme Court. The ACLU says other challenges will be pursued because care court risks violating people's right to due process and privacy and perpetuates a stereotype that the seriously mentally ill don't want help.
It's based on a myth. Service resistance is largely a myth. And so rather than having a new civil court bureaucracy that's going to traumatize folks who are already vulnerable, we need to invest in things that work and that really help people.
What works, says Rogers, is getting mentally ill people who are homeless into housing first and then treating their mental illnesses with voluntary wraparound social services. But Harold Turner says criticisms of care court, like those made by the ACLU, are academic and detached from families' real-world experiences with mental illness.
You know, I talk to families who would be happy as hell if they could get their family to even care about their rights. They're not thinking about that kind of stuff. You know, they don't care about their rights. They're too busy making life miserable for their families, virtually holding families hostage in their house.
And what about the people who actually have severe mental illnesses and who might be candidates for care court? Back on Skid Row, a number of people know about the care court debate, and they have lots of different opinions. Zenobia, who we met earlier, says she likes the idea of care court, including, if necessary, compelling some mentally ill people to get treatment.
True. See, they're not mentally capable of making the decision of whether they need help, and who wants to need help for being mental? Nobody. It's a feeling. So, of course, you're going to say no. But I think that if they are really that far gone mentally, that they should step in and intervene.
But a Skid Row resident who calls herself Ruby, who's also wrestled with her own mental illness, worries about care court's potential to abuse people's rights.
Really wary of that kind of thing, though, because you don't want people coming through and just, you know, gathering everybody up in some sort of cattle call. People have a right to their own self-determination. And I'm sorry if people are in bad positions. If you want to help people, if you want to offer them the help and really offer them good services, you'd be surprised how many people will be more than happy to jump on.
But whether they're for or against care court, just about every person I spoke to on Skid Row had concerns about LA County's ability to actually implement it. Some of those concerns are shared by Lisa Wong, the director of LA County's Department of Mental Health. For one, she's worried about finding enough trained personnel to get care court fully up and running.
We have scoped out, like, basically what we're going to need in terms of staffing. And I have to admit, it's a little intimidating to have the kind of staffing we need. I mean, we're going to need, like, probably, you know, anywhere from 600 to 800 staff to be able to do care court at the volume we anticipate.
Wong says the county will build upon existing mental health outreach programs. But finding professionals who want to do the kind of frontline, in-the-streets mental health assessments and months-long counseling that care court will require isn't going to be easy, Wong says.
During COVID, people made lifestyle decisions. And, you know, a lot of people went to telehealth or got out of the field of public mental health altogether. But there is still a solid core of people who really love this work. And those are the people we're looking for.
And along with finding staff, there are lots of very basic unanswered questions about care court's rollout in LA County. Here's a big one. Where are the lawyers going to come from who are supposed to represent the rights of the indigent mentally ill who get placed in the care court system? LA County Public Defender Ricardo Garcia says his office hasn't even been told yet whether its attorneys will represent people in care court or whether that work will be farmed out to local public interest law groups.
Well, assuming we had care court, the expectation would be that we would need additional attorney staff, social worker staff, and paralegal staff.
An absolute requirement. You need more bodies and you need more money.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. And I don't think anybody's naive enough to say that that's not the case.
Meanwhile, the clock continues to tick down toward December 1st, when Los Angeles County has promised the state it will start implementing care court. Back on Skid Row, Zenobia gives this advice to officials as they prepare to turn care court into a reality.
You got to put forth the people that have the empathy to deal with these people, the people who really care about helping these people. You have to meet people where they are, no matter what it is.
For KCRW, I'm Saul Gonzalez.
Onward now with Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and let's continue the conversation now about care courts, which may have a dramatic impact in California going forward. But let's talk now about how the state got here in the first place, to a time where such a drastic measure is needed. With me to talk about California's history leading up to the care court system are Nicole Eberhardt, a senior behavioral scientist with the RAND Corporation based in Santa Monica. Nicole, welcome to you.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Jonathan Sharon is former head of the Los Angeles County Department of Mental Health. Doctor, nice to have you on as well. Thank you.
You bet. Great to be here.
And Jonathan, I'm wondering, as someone who was such a big part of the day-to-day in mental health care here in L.A., whether you see the care court system as a viable option.
I see the care court program as one that has evolved in its necessity. And we, in the department when I was there, put together a couple of pilots that I think were predecessors of this type of program. There are some things about care court that concern me and many others, but clearly we have to figure out ways to get resources to people who are languishing, as well as to the general public who need to have a community in which they feel safe and have the opportunity to live lives as well.
Talk a little bit about some of your reservations, though, because you just said, you know, that you do have some, or there's some issues that you think are there.
Well, you know, compelling treatment is a lightning rod issue. And it really gets to the juxtaposition between autonomy and paternalism. And what we want is to always foster autonomy for everybody. So we have to be super careful when we infringe on people's civil liberties. And what I have always said, and what I tried to push very hard in the department, is that we must exhaust all efforts to engage individuals voluntarily, and we must do so with resources available. So from my perspective, you do not go to someone who doesn't have housing and force them into treatment without guaranteeing that they will have housing and that they will have support and efforts to reconnect them with their family of origin or equivalent kin, and the opportunity to do meaningful work, to have purpose in their lives. Without the people, place, and purpose being available, accessible, you cannot expect people to improve, and you certainly can't force people into care, because I don't believe that respects the option and the opportunity to become autonomous.
In our earlier story, Doctor, we heard Lisa Wong of the County Department of Mental Health say that she's concerned about being able to find the necessary staff to support care courts. Do you share that concern?
Well, first off, I applaud Lisa Wong, who took over, and I'm a massive fan, and she's doing an incredible job. And of course I do. Yes, absolutely. I think there are workforce issues across all enterprises, and certainly health and human services and behavioral health in particular. And one of the things that, you know, we focused on, that I certainly focused on my whole career, is figuring out how to expand workforce, not just with clinicians, but with individuals who have lived experience. And for those who follow the work that we did, we got a peer certification bill passed in the state of California that allows for us to use federal funding to pay for individuals with lived experience. So you can imagine someone who has suffered from mental illness or addictions, who's been homeless, who's been otherwise system involved at any point in their life, may not only need and benefit from opportunities to be employed and to develop a career, but can engage and provide the kind of support to people who are living in the streets need.
Nicole Eberhardt, what about you? Do you think the staffing issues are there? Do you have concerns about that?
I do share the concern about workforce shortages. I think that's clearly a big problem in California. You know, when you said, how did we get here? What are the causes of the mental health crisis in California? Really, two things came to mind, and they intersect with workforce. One is psychiatric bed shortages, and the other is criminalization of mental health. So my RAND colleagues and I recently did an analysis, and we looked at inpatient and psychiatric bed shortages, and we found shortages at all levels of care we examined in California. And we also found evidence of bottlenecks in the system of care, where people were getting stuck at higher, more restrictive levels of care, like LOC facilities, because of the lack of availability of beds at lower levels of care, which I think dovetails with what Dr. Sharon was saying about people being able to have autonomy. So, you know, we need more psychiatric beds, but we also need the right kinds of beds, less restrictive ones in community settings. And in our analysis, we found this was particularly true in LA County. And then another big issue, the criminalization of mental health, really dovetails with the psychiatric bed shortage issue, because when we had the deinstitutionalization movement in the U.S., a lot of state psychiatric hospitals closed, but it ultimately led to a different kind of institutionalization, holding people with mental health problems in our jails and prisons. You know, studies have found that at least one in four people with serious mental illness, illness has a history of involvement with the criminal justice system. And this relates to the psychiatric bed shortages, because decreases in psychiatric beds are directly associated with increases in folks in jail. So we end up with a situation where correctional facilities are one of the larger providers of mental health care. But obviously, this isn't an ideal care setting for recovery. And I think it dovetails with the workforce issues, because if we are trying to get more people into appropriate care rather than jails and prisons, and we're trying to increase capacity of psychiatric beds, we need people to staff those facilities. So I think it's really all intertwined.
Intertwined for sure. And you know, I want to know more about the history of this. A lot of folks talk about this, you know, the past. Some people point to former Governor Ronald Reagan and the state shutting down institutions back in the 60s and early 70s. Other people then point to Jerry Brown's moves when he was governor to get people out of prisons. I mean, what about the road, Nicole, that we've been on in California when it comes to treatment of people who are experiencing severe mental illness, who really need the help?
Well, you know, I'm not a historian. I'm a clinical psychologist and researcher.
Yeah.
But I do have to say that the problems that we have in California aren't really California specific. They're problems nationwide. Nationwide, we have psychiatric bed shortages. Nationwide, we have workforce shortages. Nationwide, we have issues with criminalization of mental health. When you have a mental health crisis, typically the person who shows up is an officer, not someone with mental health expertise. Nationwide, I do think in California, the problems are exacerbated by the shortages in affordable housing. Those contribute to some of the shortages of community residential type beds. They lead to people maybe being on the street, which would exacerbate their mental health problems. So I think our housing crisis makes it uniquely stressful in the state of California. But these trends and these problems are really national level problems from where I stand.
Dr. Sharon, what do you think? I mean, the history of it, you probably dipped, you know, your toes into the history part of it in your position. Is that what happened, or can you really point to one thing or myriad things?
Well, I think it is a combination. It's a confluence, as Nicole says. And I would say, yeah, this is national, and in many ways it's global. And you know, back in the 60s, JFK was the one that really kicked off the deinstitutionalization movement in a brave way, and in a way that I think was visionary. But it required investment in community. We all need communities, and we need inclusive communities. So that would have required the development of adequate housing, as well as enterprise jobs, for example, which do exist and exist in other parts of the world in a more robust way for those with disabilities, as a way to bring people responsibly out of institutions and into communities.
Nicole, Governor Gavin Newsom's proposing a ballot initiative, right, that would require $1 billion a year to step up California's approach to this, you know, to the mental health crisis that's going on. I mean, can you talk a little bit more about that?
In terms of the particular solution he proposes, I'm not sure, but the state of California has been doing a lot of efforts to work on these solutions. Change takes time. So, you know, care courts also is happening at the same time that we had the huge behavioral health continuum infrastructure program that gave $2.2 billion in grants to counties to build facilities at different levels of care. So the governor's new proposal to expand funding for behavioral health residential treatment kind of builds upon that. And then with respect to diversion, that's something the state's also been working on. We had AB 1810, a mental health diversion program that was signed into law, I think, in 2018. And RAND is also working on an evaluation of the impact of that initiative. And I know LA County has been doing a lot of work related to diversion locally as well, which I'm sure Dr. Sharon can speak to more. So, you know, it's a big problem. There's many, many different layers and layers of solutions that the state and the county have been looking at.
Dr. Sharon, you mentioned that JFK bravely, you know, kicked off this deinstitutionalization era. Do you think care courts here in California could swing the pendulum back?
Well, I would certainly hope not. And I would say the answer is no, that's not necessarily where this leads. And again, I want to reinforce, we have to have resources up front when we have failed to engage individuals voluntarily to guarantee those resources are available to them. And by that, I mean housing, and I mean more than housing. If we are unable to do that, then we have no business, I would say, forcing people into treatment.
Dr. Jonathan Sharon, former head of L.A. County's Department of Mental Health, and Nicole Eberhardt, Ph.D. from RAND Corporation, who is also on the line with us. I want to thank you both for the great conversation. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Have a great day.
That's it for today. Tomorrow, with the possibility of a Writers Guild strike, some production workers are already living in limbo as they wait for things to work out. What will happen? We're going to talk about it tomorrow on GLA. Check out the website at kcrw.com/GLA. There you can tell us what's on your mind, even share a story with us as well, and get the podcast as well at kcrw.com/GLA, or get the podcast wherever you get them. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Michael Stark, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Comito, and Christian Bordall all helped put the show together today. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and that ear. Have a great day.